Good afternoon. I call the Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 27th, 2023. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please silence all cell phones. Present today, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Klayman, Senator Vice Chair Willikowski, myself, Senator Bishop, Co-Chair Giesel, Senator Kaufman, and Senator Dunbar. I'd like to thank our support staff here today, Carrie Cooperator and Amanda Kraft. On today's agenda, we're going to have SB 34, Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, and an overview by the Alaska Bycatch Task Force. That's an overview presentation, and everybody's read it, so it'll be good. And with that, we had previously set a deadline on SB 34, an amendment deadline of... And we have no amendments were received. So if everybody is ready and looking to the will of the committee, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 34, Work Order 33, LS0250/B, Bravo, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
All right. Seeing no objection, the bill moves from committee. We will now move into our bycatch overview, and we'll sign the bill packet towards the end of the meeting. So, thank you. All right. We have Stephanie Madsen, Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force member and co-chair of the Western Alaska Salmon Committee here today, and with her member hat on of the Bycatch Review Task Force. Linda Kozak is on the phone, I believe, and she's here to testify as well. And so welcome to you both, and if you'd both put yourselves on the record and then identify yourselves each time between presenters, so Senate Records has a good idea of knowing who's who. So thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Senator Bishop and members of the Senate Resources Committee. My name is Stephanie Mapson. During the day, I work as Executive Director for the ATSI Processors Association. And as the Senator mentioned today, I'm here providing an overview of this Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force. And I'll wait for Linda to get herself on the record.
Linda, can you hear us this morning, this afternoon? Excuse me.
Yes, thank you, Senator Bishop and members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you very well.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Linda Kozak. I live in Kodiak. I am a member of the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force, and I was chair of the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska Crab Committee and a member of several of the other committees on the task force. And I'm very happy to be with you here today. Stephanie is going to give the presentation, and I will be available if there are any questions.
Thank you for that.
And Mr. Chairman, I think I need help. How do I move these forward?
We'll get you. We'll take a brief of these. We're back on the record. Okay, Ms. Madsen, please proceed.
Here we go. As you can see on the picture, the governor established the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force last fall. We started meeting in January, and in front of you right now, you have all of the members. It was a 17-member committee task force, and we had two non-voting members, Representative Bryce Edgman and Senator Peter Michicki were also part of it. As you can see, it is a pretty diverse group. You've got membership from up in Eagle, the Bethel region, Klutwek, and Ragnar, a lot of Western Alaskans, myself, John Jensen, I'm sure you remember Duncan. So it was a pretty diverse group, and we're pretty proud of the work that we did. So as you know, the governor did issue an administrative order. He gave us a definition. A bycatch is defined of fish which are harvested in a fishery but not sold or kept. He also gave us four tasks listed here, all of which we accomplished to different degrees, but he did provide four objectives.
Ms. Benson, I want to go back to first slide for a second. So bycatch is defined as, but are not sold or kept. So what happens?
Well, this is just a definition of bycatch. So for example, the other item that kind of came up when you're talking about salmon would be Area M. That is not considered a bycatch fishery. That's a legally landed fish. So bycatch is a incidentally caught fish that is either prohibited and you're not allowed to keep it, or sometimes there's regulatory discards or economic discards as well. But when we're talking here on the species, both halibut, crab, and salmon, which were the focus of the group, all of those are considered prohibited species catch and not allowed to be retained unless there are certain provisions, i.e. Going into a food bank program.
With the exception of Area M, is that right?
Area M is not considered a bycatch fishery and was not discussed in this task force.
Thank you. And my apologies on the decorum, but could you just let us know what slide we're on when we move for the public at home that's following along? So slide two.
We're on slide two, and that's where the definition is contained.
Thank you.
Slide three, again, is the four objectives that the governor laid out for the task force. As you can see, understanding the impacts that bycatch has on fisheries, recommending policies to better understand the high-value fishery, making sure that we're leveraging resources to better understand the issue, and utilizing the best available science.
And excuse me. We can take our time here a little bit, so slow down. 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Okay. I want to be respectful of your time and provide questions.
You've always got your A game, and I appreciate that. And you know your onions, and we just want to hear what you got to say. Thank you.
I'll take a deep breath and go a little slower. In the beginning, we did identify the process that the task force would use. That was not covered in the administrative order. ABRT members agreed to operate on a consensus basis. If there was not consensus, pros and cons would be presented. We did, as I mentioned, focus on the high-value species. That's salmon, halibut, and crab. The areas that were addressed were Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea. We did not address Southeast or the Aleutian Islands. When we look at what the kind of the makeup should be, the group agreed that there were four areas and four committees that were formed to prepare recommendations. The recommendations are categorized in three different areas: state engagement, research, and management. I would like to note here that all the recommendations were unanimously approved with the exception of one management proposal. And Mr. Chairman, I think with the diverse group that you had and the amount of meetings we had and public comment, I think that's a big statement that we really did work towards a consensus and agreed about the areas where we made the recommendations. And then our final report was delivered to Governor Dunleavy on November 30th.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Thank you. Just on the consensus-based process, does that mean all the decisions had to be unanimous?
No. If there was not consensus, then that was noted, and the pros and cons of the discussion were presented. That held both at the committee level and at the main task force level. All of the committee recommendations went through the committee, but also had to be concurred or approved by the main task force.
So if there was a majority, for example, that saw an issue on one side, would that trigger more research? Or would it take a unanimity of the group to trigger additional research?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, I'm not quite sure what you mean by additional research. Additional work? Mm-hmm. We didn't have to really deal with that very much because we did really work through it. And as you'll see on the next slide, I think we had a lot of meetings. We took a lot of public comment. So we didn't really have to face that. We really worked through some of the differences, and it wasn't a majority minority. It was either everyone agreed on a consensus or not.
Thank you. Please continue.
Mm-hmm. So here's the committee makeup. I'll just briefly leave this up here. It's all in our bycatch task force report that's online, and we had a website. That website still exists, and all of the materials are also available. So here are the four committees. Here's the list of meetings that we had, Mr. Chairman. You'll see that we had 45 meetings from the period of January to November. Each of the committees had their own meetings, and then we had 14 full task force meetings. One meeting was held in person, and that was the main task force, right, as we were kind of looking at all the recommendations. All public testimony was taken at 43 of the 45 meetings. We didn't take public comment at two of the meetings. We had a Zoom bomber, and so we had to work through some of that, and the department had kind of limited the public comment at the very end, but we also took written comment.
Senator Giesel has a question.
Sure, and just for the public listening, that was slide 7 that all of the meetings listed.
So I want to go back to, I don't want to move just yet off the, I have a question to this meeting. So 45 in-person meetings. So who scribed, do you have a scribe for each one of these meetings?
Most of them were remote, but yes, each committee chair or vice chair were responsible for doing their own minutes. We had very limited resources. There wasn't additional funds that went to supporting this task force, so we had to use existing Fish and Game staff. They were very helpful. So generally, the committee chairs, co-chairs, drafted the minutes, and the staff kind of confirmed, and then the committee approved. We were responsible for setting up our Zoom meetings, and then we would give that information to Fish and Game staff, and it would be on the public online notices. So we had an email list of people that were interested in getting notices, and then we used the state's online public notices as well to get the word out about the meetings. We obviously felt very strongly about public comment and making it accessible to the public, and so we did provide public comment at every meeting.
Thank you.
As noted.
Slide 8, please.
Slide 8. We had a lot of presentations. The first, third of the meetings were getting everybody on the same page relative to information. We all were from diverse places. Some of us knew more than others. So this is just a brief partial list of the people that we received presentations from. And these presentations were both at the committee level and at the task force level. Not all of them went to the main task force, but some of them did. And again, Mr. Chair, all of this information is in the report and online. And all the presentations are still posted.
Thank you. Slide 9.
Slide 9. So here we are kind of outlining the presentations relative to whether they were at the full task force or at the committee level. We just broke it down a little bit more for you. Slide 10 is the same. As you can see, the Western Alaska Salmon Committee received quite a few presentations. There was a lot of information there, but so did the other committees.
What's the salmon incentive plan agreements
right.
consist of?
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the incentive plan agreements are required programs that the pollock fishery has to have to fish pollock and avoid salmon. Those programs are generally described on the components of that program in regulation, and they have to be approved by the National Marine Fisheries Service. We have to provide reports annually to the council. And April will be a big council salmon agenda item. They'll be receiving the incentive plan updates from 2022. They'll be receiving the genetics information, both on Chinook and Chum salmon for 2022. And then I think later we're going to learn that the North Pacific Fishery Management Council established a salmon bycatch committee. That committee has been meeting, and they will be making their recommendations to the council about what component should be part of an analysis, and that will also take place in April. So April will be a big salmon meeting at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
At some point, could you, when it suits your fancy, you talk to us about genetics a little bit and what's involved in genetics and where genetics is going?
Sure. That was one of the recommendations, so I can speak a little bit more to it when we get to that recommendation. Slide 11, these are the presentations that the Gulf of Alaska Halibut and Salmon Committee had in front of them. Slide 12 is the Bering Sea Gulf of Alaska Crab Committee presentations. So I mentioned early on that the categories for recommendations fell into three categories, kind of three buckets pretty easily. And that's state engagement, research, and management. So we're going to start with the state engagement. And what we found, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, was that information and communication was something that we heard a lot about. People wanted to understand more about the data, the numbers, who's who, who's catching what, the bycatch related information. And I think this is an area that everyone agreed was important, and I do believe that the department is also looking at how to make this easier to understand, less acronyms, and readily available. Now, granted, for the federal fisheries, all of this information is currently available on the NOAA website, but it's very difficult to get around. So our recommendation was to establish a process for providing bycatch-related information to Alaskans in a more digestible manner. Additionally, and this has already taken place, we encourage the department to continue to offer public opportunity for input at the North Pacific Council before each meeting. Consideration should be given to additional methods to seek input from stakeholders, tribal entities, and communities on bycatch issues. And they're doing that. They actually have a remote opportunity and an in-person opportunity before each North Pacific Management Council meeting.
Senator Wilikowski?
Can I just ask kind of a fundamental question? How much bycatch is there in Alaska in terms of kings, chum, halibut? How many pounds are we talking about, or how many fish are we talking about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wilikowski, I can tell you what some of the salmon numbers are, but I'm not off the top of my head. I don't recall, and I can certainly get the department or the agency to get you the numbers. I think you also might be interested in understanding our relative bycatch relative to some of the other fisheries around the United States. And I think you would find that we have pretty low bycatch compared to some of the other fisheries around the country. For example, for Western Alaska chum, I know that's a hot topic right now. The pollock fishery last year caught about 250,000 chum. 50,000 of those were Western Alaska chum. 40,000 would be allocated to the coast-wide Western Alaska, and 10,000 for the Kotzebue fishery. And we know that from the genetics work that Senator Bishop mentioned. So that's the Chinook catch is much lower. My sector caught 2,000 Chinook for all of the last year. And again, I don't have those figures at the top, but in our IPA reports, that number will be available. And also in the halibut question, the Amendment 80 sector also has to provide a report to the council. So their bycatch of halibut would also be identified in these reports. Many of the fisheries, particularly mine, we have to report everything that every vessel catches. It's a very open and transparent process. We have the privilege of harvesting pollock. With that privilege goes transparency. So in our co-op report, and I'm way off my task force presentation, it would outline every vessel in our sector and everything that they caught in all species. So that's very available, but again, it's not easily found. So that's one, back to my task force presentation, that's really one area that we're gonna hope to work on.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, so is bycatch a problem in Alaska or is it not a problem in Alaska?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, no one wants bycatch, and everyone has bycatch. So is it a problem? I think it's a problem when you have disasters that we have. We have two multi-species collapse of salmon, as you're aware of. We have two species of crab that are in decline. We have a halibut stock that goes up and down. So we would like to avoid bycatch in whenever we can. So I think it's kind of the eye of the beholder about the intensity of the problem.
And I guess that's where what I'm trying to understand is to what degree is bycatch contributing to the crash in some of our stocks that we're seeing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, I'm a little uncomfortable because I'm supposed to be representing the task force report, but I can tell you that both for salmon, and I think that Dr. Katie Howard presented at the House Fisheries Committee, and the federal government will tell you that climate change is the driver of these declines. The contribution of bycatch is a little unclear. It's not the driver of these declines, but it could be a contributor when you have low populations.
We're going to see some climate in the back of this report. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Madsen, what happens to the bycatch that the vessels take? Do they just throw it overboard? Is it waste?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Giesel, in the pollock fishery, which I think is really the focus here, salmon are required to be counted. We have two observers on our vessels. Every salmon is required to be accounted for by census and need to be regulatory discarded unless you can food grade and they go into the SeaShare food bank program. But they are required to be discarded because they are prohibited. And most of the vessels try to keep as much salmon as we can food grade to go into the food bank program. That does have a lot of facilities to redistribute that fish, not only salmon, but other salmon species, red salmon, pollock. They have access to other species, and they have a pretty big distribution in Alaska. Not perfect. They're working on it. But it is a regulatory discard unless it's allowed in the food bank program. Halibut is a regulatory discard, and offshore, you're not allowed to keep it at all. Onshore, you can put it into the food bank program.
So could you just go a little deeper on the SeaShare program and your expansion efforts? I think you're maybe going to go up to the interior a little bit, maybe, with some of the food banks?
Mr. Chairman.
Or I could be off base. But
SeaShare is improving. They have what their difficulty is hubs. And having the container and then the distribution once they get the product to the hubs. And they're working on that. I think I saw a list that there were some donations made to Yukon villages and some of those villages up there, but I don't have the details to that. I don't want to keep plugging the North Pacific Management Council, but that's another presentation that they will get from SeaShare in April.
Senator Wilkowski.
Is there any discussion in the bycatch task force or any support recommendations about having NOAA enforcement officers working as observers on some of the fishing vessels?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, they are federal employees. There are two federal observers on our vessels. All of the observers are federal.
So there's observers on all the boats? Is that
on the offshore vessels that catch our processors? Yes. The inshore catcher vessels, varies by fishery. That's a presentation we got about the observer program at the task force. They're trying to move to electronic monitoring, so to kind of move away from having to have a human on board and using the technology. So there's a couple EFPs, and then we're moving forward with that. That is more applicable for the catcher vessels because of room, but on the catcher processors, both the Amendment 80 fleet, my fleet, and the Fraser Longline fleet have two federal observers on board. Also for salmon, we have cameras. We have cameras, quite a few cameras on board the vessels to make sure that nobody is discarding salmon either before or after the observer makes the census. And while I'm talking about observer duties, I will mention that the federal observer program are the ones that collect the genetics. So every 10th Chinook salmon is genetically tested, and every 30th Chum salmon is genetically tested. And those are sent to the Auk Bay Lab here in Juneau.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. Just to go back really quickly, sorry, got derailed a little bit, but on the cat share program and on the regulatory salmon and halibut that are caught in a particular fishery, you're mentioning the pollock, what percentage of those are actually become part of the cat share program or not just dumped overboard?
Senator I'm confused.
I do the same thing. I feel bad.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki. I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. That would be part of SeaShare's report about the amount of salmon. They report it in pounds, and there are requirements. They have to be food grade. The halibut is only allowed to be put in the SeaShare program from the shoreside processor. So there is no halibut donation program at sea. That's a regulatory requirement.
So those, through the chair, are just discarded?
Yes. Regulatory discards. Not a choice. It's what the regulations say we have to do with it. So I think you'll see when we get to some of the recommendations that there is a request here to look at full utilization and move away from these discards.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, and I was just hoping you might help me visualize this a little. I had the opportunity to work on a seiner, like most kids in Cordova, but never one of these large trawlers, these catcher processors. So can you sort of, 250,000 chums, it's hard to sort of frame that. It doesn't sound like many relative to the millions of pounds that are being caught, but can you, so when a typical trawl is brought up, mm-hmm. and you've got however many, is it hundreds or thousands of pollock per, you know, typical trawl as it comes up, how many halibut and salmon are the people on deck seeing? Or sort of, can you kind of mm-hmm. describe it a little bit?
I can try, Mr. Chairman.
And I know it's all, Dunbar, you know,
well,
varies wildly.
It does vary, and I can't really speak to halibut from my perspective because we don't catch a lot of halibut often. But for salmon, I would say we catch, for perspective, we would catch last year, 2022, we would catch about 250 metric tons, which is times 2,200 per pounds, 250 metric tons for one Chinook salmon.
Of pollock per
yes,
salmon.
Yes, per pollock.
And so
250 metric tons of pollock, we caught one Chinook salmon.
So you'd have a trawl, you know, full of a net full of pollock, and so it's just one or two salmon fall out typically, or is it, you know, every once in a while you hit a large pocket? I mean, how does it work typically?
It's interesting, Ms. Sherman. Chinook and chum are different. Chinook are kind of all around all the time. Chum really do move through, and so you might hit some chum salmon, and then they're gone. Chinook it's a little bit different fishery. So I would say that that's an average, the 250 metric tons. There will be some that we don't catch any salmon. We can't tell the difference between a salmon and a pollock on the fish finder. So it's very difficult to, you know, avoid those just by looking. I'm not quite sure I'm getting to your question, but maybe.
No, I'm just wondering, you know, when you do a purse seine,
yes,
it's like half jellyfish sometimes.
Yes,
is what it feels like at least. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you're getting these huge trawls full of pollock, and then it's relatively few salmon in the net. Is that sort of the lived experience of the fisher people?
I think that's generally correct. I mean, if we, Mr. Chairman, we run into a big ball of chum salmon, you might get more than one or two. You could get 30. Depending on when they're moving through and where the pollock are. So I think when Senator Bishop talks about genetics, I think that really is the key in moving forward, being able to determine, not in the rearview mirror, but going forward, what we're catching in real time. That's not possible today, but there's research being done and conceptual handheld types of things that we're trying to fund and work towards. That would better able us to avoid it on the grounds. Right now, and again, I'm sorry, Linda, I'm way off my task force, but right now we identify areas of high bycatch by a third party that looks at how much pollock you caught, what the salmon encounters were, and then there's a formula where those areas get shut down. Move on. If your bycatch performance is not good. So the incentive for my fleet is to stay on fishing grounds. So they would try to avoid as much salmon as they could so they could stay on good pollock grounds. That's the incentive. The penalty is if you can't, then you need to move, and that's very costly to a catcher processor fleet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Senator Klayman.
Just on following up on that same question, is it the bycatch volume alone will cause the ship to move on to another area, or is that bycatch volume somewhat correlated to the volume of pollock that's coming in?
Senator Bishop, Senator Klayman, it's a calculation. It's a number of pollock divided by the number of salmon. It's called the base rate. And there's a base rate that we look at. Sometimes they're different depending on season. That would require that area to be identified as a bycatch avoidance area. You also look at the performance of the vessel. How well are they able to avoid salmon? Again, pollock divided by the number of salmon. And then if that vessel is a poor performer, as we call them, they are excluded from that area for at least a week.
Senator Wilikowski.
Did the task force identify what levels of bycatch are acceptable and what levels are excessive?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, I don't think we ever got to that point. We did get a lot of the science about it. We did not make a determination about acceptable levels of bycatch.
Follow up?
Is that something that, it would seem to me that's something that's important, because if, for example, with the salmon, the chum salmon or the king salmon, I don't know if one fish per, would you say 250 million?
Metric tons.
That just intuitively seems like a reasonable number. But I mean, it would seem that there should be some sort of metrics. Do other fisheries have metrics for what is excessive?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, I think what you're asking me is there a view that a certain level of bycatch is acceptable or not acceptable. And I guess from our perspective, because the species that we're talking about are prohibited species, then we need to avoid them all the time, every day. And if you're asking the impact to other users of that bycatch species, then you would go to the science and you would say, what do we know about the declines of this species and what are the impacts? And I think that when you get your report on either both from the feds and the state, I think what you're going to hear on Chinook salmon is it's that first year of juvenile first year survival near shore that they think the failure is occurring. For chum salmon, they think the occurrence of the decline is the blobs, the warm water, and that the Chinook or the chum salmon go to the Gulf of Alaska to overwinter. There were two back-to-back heat waves, both in the Gulf and in the Bering Sea, which changed the makeup of their diet. And you'll see a presentation from Dr. Howard, which we did get at the Salmon Bycatch Task Force, that really has a graphic there that says that chum salmon, I didn't know, are the only salmon that eat gelatinous fish. So they're able to eat jellyfish. It's kind of us eating celery. It's not the steak that they need to make it. So they think that the heat waves, the back-to-back warm water, and then the change in their availability of the diet is really causing a lot of the problems for chum salmon in Western Alaska.
Thank you. Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Madsen. Good to see you again. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned poor performers, and I'm just wondering, can you characterize what it is that may make a given vessel a poor performer? Is it technique or configuration? What is it that would cause them to be that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kaufman, bad timing, being at the wrong place at the wrong time, really. And they encountered more salmon, and we get an alert. We do require salmon excluders for Chinook salmon. What we found is Chinook salmon, when they're in the net, they go up. Chum salmon, when they come in the net, they go down. So right now, our salmon excluders are to exclude Chinook salmon, which has been the priority for the industry based on North Pacific Management Council identifying that. So I think it's just pretty much bad luck. We did, we do have an outlier provision in our salmon avoidance plan that says that if you are an outlier, which is 1.5 standard deviations worse than everybody else, for more than 2 seasons, you will receive additional penalties.
Thank you.
Could you expound just a little bit more on that reference you made to the gear and excluders?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, we did also have a presentation about the salmon excluder work that's been ongoing and now required in the pollock fishery, both catcher vessels and catcher processors. It's not a silver bullet. It just tries to get as much salmon out as we can because we know that they are stronger swimmers than pollock. Pollock fall back into the cod end. Chinook stay forward. We've tried lights. We've tried different methods to, because as you know, that fish, Chinook salmon will go in the lees of the river. So we've tried to put the holes where the lees would be in this net and the water flowing back. So there's been a lot of work on that, but it's not a silver bullet, and it just adds to the tools that we have to try to avoid Chinook salmon.
I'm going to go to Senator Wilikowski, but I my head keeps going back to parts per million. I'm going back to my hazmat days, and I'm going to try to put this 250 metric tons into perspective in one Chinook salmon. So 250 metric tons, that's 551,000 pounds. So let's just say it was a million. Let's say it was 500 metric tons, so that's 1 million pounds. A part per million is one ping pong ball that's yellow inside an Olympic swimming pool with all white ping pong balls. So Chinook, I agree with Senator Wilikowski too. If that's the case, that's not bad.
Well, if I
could, yeah.
And the thing I'm trying to wrap my head around is if, because I agree, those numbers don't sound very bad at all. But yet we continually hear that there's a problem with bycatch to the point where we established a task force. Why did we even need a task force if it's one king salmon basically out of, you know, a couple hundred thousand pounds of fish?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, I think it was the declines in the chum salmon. We don't catch coho, but there's declines on coho, as Senator Bishop is well aware. And then the crab species, I think it's just it's a buzzword that caught on, and I think that there was an election last summer, and a lot of the candidates were focused on bycatch as a term, and I think that we needed to get to the bottom of it to, again, I think the task force was a very good forum to educate people about what the real situation was and what we're doing about it and what the impacts were. So I think that it was a response to the public outcry about bycatch, and I think this task force provided a forum for increased education.
Follow up?
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you correctly, the bycatch review task force conclusion that there's not really a problem with bycatch?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, no. We didn't say it wasn't a problem. We think that we need to keep the focus on bycatch, make sure it doesn't get worse. Look at all the tools that we have, being salmon excluders, genetics, mortality rates, gear technology. We didn't just look at trawl. There is bycatch in fixed gear and pot fisheries. In fact, in the pot fisheries in the Bering Sea for pot cod, they caught more king crab than any of the trawlers did. So as I get through here, there, we also looked at fixed gear and mobile gear, both trawl and pots.
Ms. Manson, forgive me for a minute, but I think did another committee member have a question? Did I miss somebody, or are we good? We caught up? I think we're good.
Okay.
Go to the next slide.
Well, we're still on state engagement. So these two we're working on, or the department is working on. Senator Bishop, you'll recognize this one, the bycatch task force recommended continuing the education tax credit program. This is a program that can help support bycatch technology, gear modifications. So we are supporting, the task force supported that. Additionally, we thought that the state should be working with other entities, including the State Department, on Chinook and chum salmon taken in Russian waters, as well as the genetic origin of these salmon. As I mentioned, when I talked about chum, I said that the total catch last year was about 250,000 total. 50,000 was Western Alaska chum. So the balance of that came from Asian hatchery fish, primarily. And we do have more specific information that will be coming forward on the genetics report.
Senator Klayman has a question.
I'm just trying to get the numbers that true up. You've got 250,000 chum, but that's the number of fish. What does an average chum weigh? So I'm just trying to compare the metric tons of pollock that you're getting to the to a comparable weight as opposed to number of fish.
Senator Bishop, Senator Klayman, I don't have that information, but that information is also collected by the Federal Observer Program. And as we all know, the fish are coming back smaller. And then the different ages, depending on when they might be bycaught, they're not necessarily returning to the river system. So they might be younger. But the weight and age are all accounted for and available.
Follow up.
Can you at least give us a little bit of an idea about what range you're tending to see for the chum?
I'm sorry, I'm not. Okay. Senator Bishop, I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know that. There might be a presentation in here that would have that information, though. So go to the bycatch task force.
Ms. Manson, let's stop for a second. I want to try to put this in perspective again. So 200,000 chum, individual fish, and 150,000 or thereabouts was Asian genetic fish. Is that right?
I'm not very good at math sometimes on the fly, but I would say that the 250,000 that I mentioned, okay, about 50,000 is coastwide Western Alaska.
Okay, so let's just hold that thought for a minute. So 50,000 coastwide Alaska fish, you want to put that in perspective. So I'm going to put it in a 40-foot band perspective. That's about 9, depending upon if they're 4.6s or 6.9s, that's about 9 van loads of fish, just for to put a visual on that. So, okay, thank you.
I will take your word for that, Senator.
I've packed a lot of vans, so. Yeah.
Okay, so I think I'm on slide 16, and this is a continuation of state engagement recommendations. The next one is to use the Alaska Bycatch Review Task Force as a template and request that the state should consider establishing a permanent bycatch advisory entity. You're going to see at the end that the commissioner has done that. The commissioner, using his executive order or his administrative power, has established the Alaska Bycatch Review Council, I think it's called. So that has happened, and that will be advising the commissioner on all bycatch issues.
Senator Wilikowski?
Oh, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this concept that bycatch is not a problem. And I'm just reading this. I just Googled it. Just reading this article in ADN a couple months ago, and it said Black Sea sablefish, black cod in 2020 ended the year at 7.9 million pounds, 519% over the trawl bycatch limits. Is that number accurate?
Senator Bishop, Senator Wilkowski, I'm fine with this line of questioning, but I'm really here to represent the task force report, and I'd be happy to come and meet with you or come back to the committee with some of that information. The sablefish is an explosive population all up and down the West Coast. There are several gear types that catch a sablefish. I'm not sure that anyone in the task force or myself today said that bycatch is not a problem. So I'm a little unclear about what you're asking.
So we'll try to stay on your task force report, then have you or others back for the other.
Senator Bishop, I'm happy to do that. I understand this is an important issue to Alaskans, and I don't want to avoid it. I just want to represent the task force so I'm not in trouble with my members.
Senator Wilikowski,
were there any recommendations made regarding gear usage or techniques or restrictions that should be put in place to reduce bycatch?
Senator Bishop, Senator Wilikowski, yep, we're going to get there. So here, the Board of Fish, we're talking, one of the recommendations was to develop a state of Alaska bycatch policy that the Board of Fish could use, because if you recall, the feds manage 300 to 200, but the state Board of Fish manages 0 to 3, and so we were also looking at those fisheries as well.
17.
So then we get into the research recommendations, and this can be quite detailed, and I encourage you to go through that. I think the state, most of these recommendations came from the state and the federal governments that are doing the research. And again, here you can see we made 3 general recommendations. We believe that the state should develop bycatch research priorities, again, seeking input from communities, tribes, industry, and public that we could share with funding entities that would help identify and acquire research funds. We can't do it all ourselves. We need to identify priorities, share them with the other funding agencies to see if we can't pull together some funding partnerships. Implement strategies to encourage and facilitate cooperative research to reduce bycatch and associated mortality. I think this was a big one. Not only does the research entities have a responsibility, but there's an opportunity here to cooperate with research. And right now, there is a research program happening out in the Bering Sea with the state, the crab industry, and the federal government trying to do a pot survey during the winter time. So we're familiar with cooperative research, and we think we would like to see more of that. And again, the last one is just the methods. How do we communicate and collaborate with West Alaska Native tribes, organization? How do we track what happened with that research that was funded? You know, do we build on it? Does it go away? Do people know about it? We found that there was just a little bit of a gap on the money that we're spending on research and how that's conveyed and built upon.
Ms. Madsen, did you go any deeper on this and noodle on ideas how to work with the tribes? Example. Let's work with the tribes and see if we can get somebody trained up from each village as an observer. So we've got one of our own, if you will, you know, Western Alaska, pick your river, Yukon, Kuskokwim. Did you get that level of detail?
Chairman, we didn't get into that level of detail, but we had at least 3 tribal members on there. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and Karma Olby, the chief in Eagle, she'll be part of the advisory council that the commissioner DVO established. And so this is an area where we need to work. And this is one of the reasons why we thought that work needed to continue, because we identified these topics in these areas, but we need to implement. And so some of these things would be implementation. And I think just communication and outreach will go a long way.
And I understand it's a recommendations. Now we need to go to solutions. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question more about the research, because it does talk a little bit about research in this slide and several other slides that the task force would like to hear. Why is this different than the research that's been done over the last 2 decades? And what kind of research do you need that's adapted to the situation we have today? Because I'm reading a report. This was a 79 mention of the stock composition of Chinook bycatch from this fishery, and it showed that the majority of samples of those Chinook were from Western Alaska stocks. And this is recycled in the 2010 report that NOAA put out.
Senator Bishop, Senator Kawasaki, I think the next slide will go to the general areas where we want. I think that the information on Chinook is correct. It is the majority of Western Alaska. It's chum salmon that is not. So I'm sorry if I was not clear. But here's the 3 for all species and all gears. This is where we think that research could be done that would help reduce bycatch. First of all, we need updated discard mortality rates. You know, a lot of the fixed gear, they don't kill everything. It might be bycatch, but for example, a peacod fishery that uses pods has a 50% discard rate for red king crab. So we're estimating that if you caught this crab, 50% of them would die. Now, those are old. What we've discovered is all those discard mortality rates for crab, salmon is a different issue, but halibut need to be updated. Gear modifications and improved technology. I think that's an area where we know that with improved technology, specifically genetics, some of the gear adaptations for the Slinky Pots are one that has been mentioned. That is an area that we think technology could work, research on those areas. And understanding the shifting distribution patterns. With climate change and warming waters, what we found is the fish are they're not always in the same spot. So when you're looking at trying to manage fisheries, having to look in the rearview mirror is difficult. So just depending on history doesn't help you predict the future. So I think we need to update and constantly look at understanding the shifting distribution patterns. Many of you that have been following Bering Sea know that it's very important to have a cold pool. And the cold pool in the Bering Sea comes and goes. And when it's not there, we see more difficulties. So understanding this, and I mentioned the food, the distributional changes in food. That means that the fish are going to go where the food are. So we need to understand it. So these are the three areas that we thought were high-level recommendations for all species and all gears.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Chairman Bishop. Just really quickly, you said update discard mortality rates. Is that because our current rates are too low or too high?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dunbar, I don't know that we express an opinion. We just think that they need to be updated. Some people thought they were too low. Some people thought they were too high in our task force. So I think we need the science to understand them. Because if you have a bycatch rate and you have an associated discard mortality, that's being applied to your rate. So people are very interested to make sure that we have the best available science to go along with those mortality rates.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue. Page 19. Senator Wilikowski.
Just on that gear, if you could go back a slide. The gear modifications, this is what I asked you about before. Is that the recommendation that was made regarding gear, was to modify the sweeps?
The overall research recommendation was gear modifications and improved technology for all species, all gear. So we have a picture of a trawl here, but there are all, but as I mentioned, we also looked at fixed gear.
So were there specific modifications? Is this just a general recommendation? Is there a specific gear that you're recommending be modified?
I think it was a general recommendation recognizing that as new technology and gear improvements come in, they should be investigated, understood, either required or voluntarily used.
So is that going to happen this fishing season?
This fishing season? Well, I'm not sure from a public perspective that we're modifying our gear. Our gear is defined pretty specifically in regulation. So we have very limited ability to modify our gear. But we do have salmon excluders in them, and we haven't done an experimental fishing permit on those in a while, but there continues to be work done at the NOAA gear conservation.
Well, which method of I guess, fishing catches the most bycatch?
Senator Bishop, Senator Wachowski, what species would you be interested in?
Say king salmon, let's say chum salmon.
I think that both the salmon species are primarily in the pollock fishery. There is a little bit of incidental catch in other trawl fisheries. Primarily the Amendment 80, the bottom trawlers account for the majority of the halibut. There's also different impacts based on sector. In the pollock fishery, we have the catcher processor sector, which is offshore, mothership sector, and inshore sector. And there's presentations that indicate that where the chum salmon are is really where the catcher vessels harvest their pollock more than the catcher processors. So that information is also available. And then we can look at, back to genetics. Then we can look at where are the Western Alaska salmon in these five clusters that we've identified early or late season. So we are kind of zeroing in on how can we avoid Western Alaska salmon using the genetics to our best of our ability.
I think personally myself, that's going to be the key.
Yep.
Senator Klayman.
As I'm listening to a lot of the discussion, particularly the questions that Senator Wilikowski's been asking about, is bycatch a problem? It seems like there's some evidence you received in the task force that suggests that bycatch may not be such a problem in the volume, but on the other hand, there's a lot of voices in the community. I've heard them saying that bycatch is a problem and has been for a long time. Can we conclude that to some extent that the task force suggesting more research is a reflection of kind of that topic going on about is it a problem, and if it is a problem, how extensive is it, and how does that relate to the declining populations?
Senator Bishop, Senator Klayman, I think I'm not quite sure that the task force got that specific, but I think that we recognized that we need to continue. This is not a one and done. This is a constant revisiting the best available science, the gear work, the technology, and better understanding as we go. Now, I know that the problem, I think I might have said earlier, is a little bit in the eye of the beholder. I mean, do you think it's a problem because fishing is the problem that's causing the declines? Or is fishing a contributor to the problem? I think that's a little bit of the conversation. For example, you could look at some of the data, and I think if you got some of the scientists to come back, they don't see bycatch as a driving problem. This bycatch did not get us where we are today. And so I guess that goes to, is it a problem? Well, it's a problem because we need to continue to work on that. Is it a problem because it caused the declines? I think you'll find a difference of opinions on that from the science community.
Okay. Follow up?
Is your sense there is consensus on what got us to where we are today, or is that another area where there's not consensus and there's a lot of debate?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think, Senator Klayman, I think that when you ask or look at Dr. Katie Howard's presentation or Dr. Ed Farley from the National Marine Fisheries Service, I think I characterize their view on what's causing the Chinook and Chum decline.
Okay, we're on page 19 now. We got 38.
19, yep, I got to speed up here. And again, these research recommendations, you can see genetics appears right there, better understanding of distribution and migration patterns, which the genetics does help us with. Here it's patterns again, understanding stock-specific information and improved understanding of fishery impacts. These recommendations on salmon primarily came from the Department of Fish and Game and Dr. Ed Farley at the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. These are the items that they indicated would help them understand both the impacts of bycatch to the directed fishery or the relative importance of mechanisms that are driving abundance. They also wanted additional research on non-adult abundance estimates. What are the critical period survival periods of Western Alaska? And I mentioned that right now they're looking at the juvenile inshore survival. The Gulf of Alaska salmon research recommendations were very aligned with the Bering Sea salmon research recommendations. Additionally, though, they wanted a little bit more a spatial assessment for the Gulf genetics. They do genetics in the Gulf of Alaska, but they don't have a spatial assignment or assessment like they do in the Bering Sea. As I mentioned, they're identifying 5 cluster areas, and so that was one of the recommendations. So here, moving on to halibut, the Gulf of Alaska Halibut Committee, the top priority here, again, is understanding total halibut removals and discord mortality. This came from a presentation primarily from the International Pacific Halibut Commission, which manages the halibut, which goes from 3 to 200 miles. Again, crab. We looked at crab. Additionally, we looked at both the Gulf of Alaska crab and the Bering Sea crab. And these are some of the areas of unobserved mortality, observed and unobserved. And I'll just read a couple of them. Impacts of repeated capture, discarding of crab. What is the impact of that? Data gaps regarding the uncertainties in the directed crab fishery. We do have an unobserved state pod cod fishery. So we don't really understand what is being removed in that fishery because there is no observers. And then the North Pacific Management Council is required to look at habitat disturbance of fishing effects, and they're required to do that every 5 years. They just redid that, and they looked at the habitat disturbances using the fishing effects model. We looked in the, primarily you can see the Kodiak Island, of Kodiak there. We've really focused here on critical habitat, crab habitat, in some of the open and closed areas for canner crab. And so we got a little bit specific about the areas, the removals of the ground fish, and understanding more of what's going on with the different life stages. And then here is where there was a big conversation in the Gulf of Alaska issues about observer programs. They don't have as much observer coverage right now as the Bering Sea does. And so there was electronic monitoring that I mentioned, and then a BMS opportunity that might help inform essential fish habitat models. So here we are into the management recommendations. We considered 17 management recommendations, all by consent for fixed gear, which is longline and pot, and trawl gear, both areas. This is the main one, not main one in priority, but this one came a little bit late in the game, but everybody fully supported it, and that is bycatch utilization. This is a tough one, and there's a lot of hurdles to it, but the task force felt like we needed to start peeling the onion, so to speak, to try to understand what the barriers are for implementation here, to improve bycatch utilization. When fish are caught in either gear that it wasn't designed for or discards in a directed fishery, for example, the crab fishery has some discards in the directed fishery, so that are required by regulation to discard. And the task force felt strongly that bycatch utilization should be something that we start talking about in a little bit more specific way. So we had four management recommendations for Bering Sea fixed gear and four for trawl. Watching my time, these are kind of detailed, and I look forward to maybe having additional conversations, but I think one thing that came out is observer coverage, monitoring both the directed crab and pot cod fisheries, seasonal closures for hotspot areas for pot gear, both inside and outside state managed fisheries. We don't have a full kind of accounting for some of those gear and fisheries. And then looking at retaining all legal crab in the directed crab fishery and counting towards your IFQ. I think sometimes that people consider that high grading, where you're kind of picking the best, and it's not illegal, but we're concerned about that. And then recommending a rationalization program. Rationalization really means stopping the rates for fish, assigning a certain amount of quota by vessel so that they can better manage their own fishery. Right now in the Gulf of Alaska and some of the fisheries in the Bering Sea, it is a race for fish and causes some issues.
Senator Giesel.
Ms. Madsen, what is IFQ?
Individual fishing quota.
Oh, thank you.
Senator Vision, through the chair.
So those IFQs aren't willy-nilly, right? I mean, there's only so many assigned to so many fishermen by species. Could you explain that a little bit better?
Senator Bishop, there's an IFQ fishery for crab, an IFQ fishery for halibut, an IFQ fishery for black cod down here in southeast, and further, there's a black cod IFQ fishery. The pollock fishery is not considered an IFQ. It's the American Fisheries Act, which Senator Stevens and Senator Gorton established, did it by sector, so it's not a straight an individual fishing quota, a program like we think about. So I hope I didn't get any of that wrong, but those are the main IFQ programs. And there's several of them that are asking for rationalization program. That is this, the 60-foot and greater pod cod vessels would like to have a rationalization program, and I think pretty soon you're going to get to the Gulf of Alaska trawl fisheries. We're recommending that the state look at a rationalization program for that fleet as well.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think it's clear from that explanation, but just to underscore it, that's a really big deal. I mean, you go to an IFQ system, it fundamentally changes the fishery forever. And it's incredibly contentious because who gets those quotas? You know, typically it's based on prior market share, but it's very, very contentious and political. But it is interesting to see this actually being one of the task force's recommendation. I guess, how realistic is that actually happening, though?
Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, I think for this program, for the request here, it could be more likely because there's less participants in that program. In the Gulf of Alaska rationalization program is a big lift, but we have experience with IFQs. We can address the problems that we have seen in others. For example, barriers to entry is a big concern. How do you prevent barriers to entry in the IFQ program? Several ideas set aside for entry level. In the halibut IFQ program, you have to be on board, which kind of prevents some abuse. So I think that it depends on the fishery, on how complex it was. Crab was a little bit less complex, although it was driven by a congressional request. Halibut IFQ, I think, was one of the first IFQ programs, and I think many of the communities here in Southeast were a little bit shocked that it went to the road system so fast and that they no longer were involved in processing halibut. So I think we have lessons learned moving forward, hopefully. And we might be able to craft some programs.
Brief follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So trying to understand the structure of the industry and the pollock fishery in particular, we're talking in most cases about very large, you know, $100 million ships. Is that right? And pretty consolidated already with very large corporations. So those entities would get the majority of the quotas? You're shaking your head no. And then also, practically speaking, who does the rationalization? Like, where is it, the council? Is it Congress? Who actually rationalizes the fishery?
Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, good question. The pollock fishery is already rationalized. That was done through the American Fisheries Act. That was a congressionally authorized program. So pollock is not being considered. Now, the pollock fishery in the Gulf of Alaska is. It is a smaller fishery, local boats primarily, smaller boats. So that is one of the fisheries that are being looked at because of salmon bycatch, halibut bycatch. And that has been the focus of several attempts to who does it. The North Pacific Management Council is advisory to the Secretary of Commerce. So they would be developing the program and then forwarding it on to the Secretary, U.S. Secretary, for consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue.
So I'm on slide 30. This is a Bering Sea trawl. And again, you'll see that the first one is real-time genetics reporting, Senator. We've got to be out. That's really one of the answers to avoiding Western Alaska, both Chinook and Chum in the Bering Sea. And then out of the Bering Sea Western Alaska Salmon Committee, we also requested that the state consider working on a scientifically based chum salmon cap to reduce bycatch of Western Alaska salmon in the pollock fishery. I'm pleased to report that our Salmon Bycatch Committee through the North Pacific Management Council just concluded their meetings last week, and they're going to be submitting to the council a range of alternatives. One of them is a cap. So we'll see how that moves through the council process. Again, this is looking at open and closed areas and the efficacy of open and closed areas to develop flexible spatial management. As you can imagine, if there's changing climate, drawing boxes around certain areas is likely not going to work because the fish don't stay there or their food doesn't stay there. And so the council is really trying to develop flexible spatial management. How do you best do that given the regulatory structure?
Thank you.
And then there's some specificity on the trawl prohibited caps for crab and whether we should be expanding the area that the PSC has counted against some of the details of the way the crab program works. And the council is also looking at crab, so I wouldn't be a bit surprised if these concepts don't come through the council again. Two management recommendations here on fixed gear, gear modifications. Consider regulations for the director of crab fishery and pot cod fishery to reduce incidental take and discard mortality and address the lack of monitoring in the directed tanner crab and state waters peacod fishery, which we've talked about before.
33.
We're on the Gulf of Alaska trawl gear, six manager recommendations. This primarily is open and closed areas for the pelagic and non-pelagic trawl gear relative to closing areas of or looking at additional areas that could be closed to reduce a bycatch of halibut, salmon, and tanner crab. Catcher vessel trawl is mentioned here and the effort to get 100% observer coverage when engaged in non-pelagic trawling. As I mentioned, work is being done on electronic monitoring to address this. They do now have some observer coverage, and the way that observer coverage works is that maybe 30% of the vessels will have observers, but that observer data is extrapolated to the whole fishery. So even if you don't have observer on your vessel, you get the observer coverage from the vessel that had it.
And I believe this is what Senator Murkowski and the delegation is pushing in this electronic monitoring. Is that, am I accurate or not?
Senator Bishop, yes, you are accurate. They are very interested in moving forward and have provided some funding and put some pressure on the agency to move forward with some of it. As with all programs, as you can imagine, there's barriers. There's paperwork, there's regs that have to be changed, and I think both of our senators have been very persuasive about we need to figure out some of these problems and move forward.
Ms. Madsen, can you be specific on the agency? I think we know at the table, but people at home, this our delegation's pushing on.
National Marine Fisheries, sir.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you for reminding me. And you have just identified the communications issues that we discovered in our task force. We use acronyms. We use kind of general terms. And I think that's what we heard from the public is we don't understand what you're saying and we don't know how to find that out. So that's one of the areas where we're going to focus. Okay, here again, we're talking about electronic monitoring, getting the state and our federal delegation about funding. We just covered that. And then, as you might be aware, in the Bering Sea, we have an abundance-based program for halibut PSC, prohibited species catch. That has not been implemented, but it has been approved by the council. And the agency, but not implemented. And people would like a consideration for an abundance-based program on halibut bycatch for the Gulf. Full retention is a conversation that we've had here. As you can see, full retention kind of goes back to the full utilization recommendation. And high mortality, again, how do we reduce managing bycatch and associated mortality of high-valued species? And here is the rationalization-type management tools that we request be considered.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it sounds like if I understood your testimony earlier, your organization is primarily in the Bering Sea fishery, and the recommendations here are more like, oh, no, it's the Gulf of Alaska fishery. Did the Gulf of Alaska fishery also have representation on the task force?
Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, I was the sole trawl representative, so I had an obligation to represent my colleagues in the Gulf.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep, please continue.
So we're on slide 37. This was a recommendation by Senator Machiki. When we start talking about research and management linkages, he thought it would be important to try to demonstrate visually how the research and the management linkages come together. And I know this is impossible to read, but I think in the task force report, it's a little bit clearer to read, just the relationship between research and management actions. You need the research to support those management actions. And here, Senator, we're getting to the end. A bycatch advisory council. So this was formed March 10th under Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang's authority, and it is established to advise the department on ways to implement implement recommendations contained in the report. Here is a group. So many of you know Kevin Delaney. He represented the sport fish industry on the task force. Linda Kozak, who is on today, lives in Kodiak. She was the chair of the CRAB committee and co-chair of the one other committee. Brian Gabriel is the mayor of Kenai Borough, maybe. Can't quite remember. Myself, John Jensen, as you all know, he was our chairman. And then Karma Alvey from Eagle will also be part of this bycatch advisory council.
Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So what happens now is you've got these recommendations. Some of these look like maybe Board of Fish, some maybe National or North Pacific Marine Fisheries Management Council. Where do we go from here? Is there some sort of process in place to implement these or discuss these?
Senator Bishop, Senator Wilikowski, I think, as I mentioned, some of them are already underway. I'm not quite sure if the task force should take credit for that or not, but they are underway, like, for example, the chum cap and some of the genetics work. I think that the research, some of the research is being funded and looked at. As you are aware, likely, the senators established the Salmon Research Task Force, which will also be looking at research and funding. And I think that the makeup of that has been determined, and I believe they're getting ready to have a series of meetings. So I think our research will feed into that. Our research will also feed into the North Pacific Research Board, the state's priorities for research, the federal priorities for research, and any independent researchers can use those research recommendations. On the management side, I can't say that all of them are underway, but salmon is a topic in April. In June, we'll be looking at the North Pacific Management, we'll be looking at crab. I don't know about the Board of Fish interest in looking at some of these recommendations at this point. I would leave that to the commissioner and John Jensen. And then I think to make sure to keep the foot on the pedal, the Bycatch Advisory Council will continue to take these recommendations, especially the state engagement ones, where we can increase communication and understanding. I think that'll be probably our first priority, to try to get the website better. All of these presentations are on the website, a little hard to find. The task force is still up. We're going to make it easier to access and better to understand.
Yeah. Committee member, do you have a question, Senator Dunbar?
Is that right, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I'm gonna give Ms. Kozak time to say any closing remarks. She's been on the phone for an hour and a half, but ask your question.
Just very briefly, and for Ms. Kozak as well. So you mentioned that the harvest of salmon in Area M is incidental take, not bycatch. Is that the right terminology?
I think it's legally landed, so I'm not quite sure incidental. I'm not real familiar with Area M fishery, quite frankly, Senator Dunbar, but
this gets to my question. That okay. I think for people of Western Alaska, you know, this sort of legal distinction doesn't change the ultimate outcome. And so how do you prevent this council from being siloed off from that issue the way that it sounds like this working group was? And, you know, how will the council address that issue? And if not them, then who does the coordination between them and, you know, other entities on this issue?
Senator Bishop, Senator Dunbar, the Area M fishery is managed by the Board of Fish, so the council wouldn't have any authority over that fishery. I think that Board of Fish just met for the Alaska Peninsula issues and took this issue up. There is an outcome that I think, I don't want to express an opinion about that, but I think as with any outcome, there were winners and losers, and
that's perfect.
That's stop perfect.
Right there.
Okay.
Ms. Kozak, Linda Kozak, are you still with us?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and again, Linda Kozak, for the record, I would like to thank Stephanie for making the presentation. It was a little Pollock heavy in my view, but I understand the questions from the committee, and they are important issues to address. I'd like to touch on just a couple of things very briefly, and one is the rationalization type tools that are being looked at for the Gulf of Alaska trawl fishery and the Bering Sea pot cod fishery over 60 feet are not necessarily an IFQ type fishery. They'd be a more of a cooperative look at being able to better manage your bycatch, better ways to alert others when you run into a hot spot area. So we looked at the rationalization tool specifically as it relates to bycatch. We didn't look at other social engineering issues in regard to that, and there are many to be addressed, but in regard to managing and reducing bycatch, that is one of the reasons why we made those recommendations. I wanted to make that clear. The second thing is that the bycatch task force does believe bycatch is an issue. We've had bycatch forever. We'll always have bycatch, and whatever we can do to reduce bycatch, as Ms. Madsen said, is important, and we hope that our work can help proceed with that. The last thing I'd like to say is that the Bycatch Advisory Council will take the recommendations from the task force, which, as you saw, were more at the 30,000-foot level, and we will work with the department and we will work with other policymakers to try to figure out ways to better manage bycatch through implementation of those. We will try to look at some of the research that's going on and try to make recommendations on how that can be improved in order to better inform the policymakers. And we recognize that we are not trying to set policy, so we didn't address caps. We didn't address things that are under the purview of the Board of Fish or the North Pacific Council. But I'm very proud of the work that we did, and I think the Bycatch Advisory Council is going to continue that work, and we will be holding public meetings starting this Friday. We'll be having our first meeting, our organizational meeting, and so I believe that we will continue to meet the challenges that Alaska faces in addressing bycatch. And thank you so much for the opportunity, Mr. Chair, to make some comments.
I'd like to take this time. I keep coming back to genetics. Right now, it appears, now I went to DIPAC here, I don't know, Senator Kawasaki, I think you went with, we were down there together, maybe or not, but right now the genetic testing all has to be done here in Juneau, I believe, and it was quite interesting how that process is, and it's a lengthy process, right? But if, as one person that's We got to get some way to get some real-time genetic testing on the boats. I think that's the fastest and best way to eliminate as much bycatch as you can. Just my opinion. And if you want to comment any more, Stephanie, Ms. Madsen, on genetics and what that looks like today and what it could look like in the future.
Senator Bishop, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that if you put yourself in the wheelhouse of a catcher processor fishing for pollock in the Bering Sea, and you could identify when you were in areas of Western Alaska salmon and able to move, that would be desirable. I will give the Auk Bay Lab credit. It used to take a year to get these genetics turned around, and now we're looking at 2022 genetics at the April Council meeting. And the fishery just ended, you know, last fall. So I think they've done a yeoman's job, given their budgets and their workload, to get that turned around. I think there's efforts to use a technology that some of the Bristol Bay area uses at the Port Moeller to determine the genetics. So we're working with those folks. It's a little bit complicated because of the connects that you need and the staffing that you need, but I can make a commitment that we're going to do whatever we can to promote that work because I think you've identified the real opportunity here to focus mitigation measures on Western Alaska chum is critical.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions from the committee, thank you, Ms. Mattson and Ms. Kozak, for serving on the committee and continuing to serve on the council as we go forward. So our next meeting is Wednesday, March 29th at 3:30 p.m. On the agenda will be the first hearing of SB 92, State Ownership of Submerged Land, sponsored by Senator Giesel. So no further committee business. We're going to gavel out at, we're going to gavel out at 4:55. We're adjourned.